Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Famous words uttered by Charlton Heston playing Moses in the movie The Ten Commandments. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It's a very good flick. These are words that have echoed down through the ages as a warning to tyrants and inspiration to people seeking liberty. And it seems as if these are the words that are being echoed by the people in today's Egypt. Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. If you've been watching the news lately, the big story seems to be an airplane crash in San Francisco. Sadly, two young girls were killed, but I'm still not sure how this is dominating the news coverage when there's a whole series of explosions and fires all over the world, and unfortunately, Big Fed is involved in just about every single one of them in your name. The biggest one being what's going on over in Egypt, where apparently the ouster of Mohamed Morsi of the Peace and Justice Party, a.k.a. the Muslim Brotherhood Salafist Jihadis, has occurred because the people didn't want him, although some of the people apparently do want him, and some of the people out there also seem to want Mubarak back. So it looked like the situation is ripe for a civil war. Of course, what's keeping everything calm is the military. Well, that's the military that you have bought and paid for that has basically been propping up all the dictators that they don't want, the people there don't want, but get forced by the United States. And at one point or another, we've backed the Muslim jihadis, we've backed the authoritarian dictator Mubarak, we've backed the military. We're always paying for the military to the tune of over $80 billion over the last four decades. And we've also backed and agitated the, quote, you know, Arab Spring protesters. So we've backed everybody against everybody else. No wonder they all friggin' hate us. Here's a great idea. How about we let Egypt be the Egyptians' problem and not ours? But we don't want to spend all night talking about Egypt, even though it is something that we're involved in and is pretty important. we really want to focus on something else, and that is when I keep seeing people in America, liberals, well, not so much liberals, but libertarians, conservatives, Tea Party, saying that we should, quote, walk like the Egyptians. I don't think that the Bengals have ever been this popular, but nevertheless, do we really want to walk like the Egyptians? Well, in the sense that it is a popular democratic uprising, sure. But it's just not that cut and dry over there. Essentially, what happened is some of the people were not happy with Morsi's Sharia radicalism, similar to what's going on with Erdogan in Turkey. But other people were just, you know, looking for an opportunity to put, you know, their guy back in power, and no respect for the rule of law. And the Constitution that was essentially drafted by the Muslim Brotherhood didn't permit any kind of recall or impeachment. So you kind of see that their hand was forced in that sense. But as always, it's the military that steps in. So, you know, is it a revolution? Is it a military coup? Sort of a bit of both. But here's the crazy thing. When you say in America, let's walk like the Egyptians, are you suggesting that we have a military coup and suspend our Constitution? Because if that's what you're thinking, that's crazy. That's insane. Why would we want to suspend our Constitution? De facto, the Constitution was suspended 100 years ago, but why would we not want to restore it as opposed to officially suspend it? It's a little off chaos. All right. Well, now we've got our co-host ready, joining us from a place where certain things happened in the past that we might want to talk about, particularly last August. Tex, you are live on our show.
Hey, Rex. Well, usually we do the introduction, but I guess we're going without formality this time. That's fine. This is Tex. You know who I am because I'm part of the show. Anyway, yeah, so with respect to Egypt, I tend to agree. I don't know who's saying that, you know, this is a good idea to repeat here. I think that's completely wrong. But I think that in Egypt, what they did is they had a revolution, and they said that, you know, we're tired of Mubarak, we're tired of what's going on. So they rose up, and they had this revolution. Then they had an election after that where they had, I believe it was 12 candidates, most of whom were reformers. And thus, much like for those who follow Republican primary politics back in 2012, you split the conservative base among several candidates while the rhinos were all concentrated around Mitt Romney, and the net result was Mitt Romney wins with a bunch of shenanigans in the background. Same thing with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, where people wanted to vote for reform candidates, but they split it among several different candidates, and Morsi ended up winning with, I believe he got 24.98%, 25% of the vote, whatever it is, and then went about his normal way, which is, oh, I'm going to start enacting all this Islamic Brotherhood Sharia stuff, which is not what the original Egyptian revolution had been about. And so if you are an Egyptian, you're upset with the way things are going, and so you're like, you know, this is something that actually happens in history, which is where if you have a revolution in your country, the likelihood that you're going to have another one is very high. The further the distance you get from the last one that you had, the more stability that you have. It's just a historical fact. So they just had one recently, you know, within the last year, year and a half, whatever it was. And so now they're having another one because it didn't work out the way they wanted it. If you think about the French Revolution wasn't a revolution. It was several revolutions that came in a wave of, and, you know, a series of succession. And that's what Egypt's going through now. So, in all honesty, I'm sort of sympathetic with both because, you know, okay, Mubarak had to go. He was a dictator and a tyrant, and they wanted to do something else. This one, they want to get rid of the Islamic Brotherhood, and, you know, they've been persecuting Christians and that sort of thing. The reality is the people don't the purpose of the original revolution was stop persecuting us. And then they get somebody that's like, okay, we're not going to persecute everyone. We're just going to persecute these people, you know. Well, what is the point of that? And now you have a situation where the military has now ousted Morsi and the Islamic Brotherhood. And the problem is the military under Mubarak was, you know, capturing and torturing the Islamic faction. And so now they're terrified because, oh, crap, the military is back in charge and they used to torture us. And we certainly can't let them get back in charge, because if they get back in charge, then, you know, we need to go after them. And so now basically the seeds are sown for a civil war to occur within Egypt, which is going to be completely destabilizing, and any sort of reformist movement will probably get lost in the shuffle of that. If they can keep it peaceful, it would be good. The thing is, are they going to be able to keep it peaceful? And, you know, my personal opinion is I think that's doubtful, but they're definitely going to try, and they probably have a lot of world powers who are going to try to keep it peaceful, too. As you know, there's a lot of interest involved in that. So that's my thoughts on Egypt in a nutshell, and so I'll turn it over to you because you want to talk in a slightly and different context.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the context is, look, you know, we're American conservatives, so let's look at it from that perspective. The first thing is, you know, you're mentioning, you know, civil war being highly likely, yeah, and world powers being involved, sure. I mean, let's not think for a second that, you know, with the severe backing of Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood by our federal government headed by Barack Hussein Obama hasn't gone, you know, unnoticed by other world powers. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tehran, Moscow, and even possibly Beijing were in favor of ousting our guy again. But, you know, the fact is that it's chaos.
I wouldn't be surprised if we were in favor of ousting our guy. You know, I mean, it's sort of a marriage of convenience.
Exactly. So, but I mean, the crazy thing is that we've been spending billions of dollars funding this, and the military that's basically been propping up every regime, including Mubarak's, is financed by us. So, you know, our money is, or our debt is basically, you know, the burden of our debt is basically what's financing the military strength in this country. And we've backed just about every side at one point or another, so they kind of all hate us. The military, you know, may hate us, but obviously they want our money, so we kind of got a little control over that. And then, you know, you see all the agitation for who's going to replace him. And at one point they were announcing that El-Baradei, you know, of the IAEA, was going to be the prime minister or president, and then he wasn't, and now it's possible that he is. Well, remember, that's a Soros guy. So everybody's got their hands in this. And I think one thing that we all have to understand is from our perspective, other than personally where you don't want to see people persecuted, especially Coptic Christians if you're a Christian, I don't know that that's, you know, that's not our military problem. That's not a national interest. That's a personal interest. We should certainly stand against it and denounce it, but I don't know about getting involved because, I mean, what are you going to do, go into the whole world? Oh, wait, we already have. Unfortunately, in most places we've gone in, we're not coming in to stop the persecution of Christians and minorities. We tend to be the ones agitating for it, which is just insane and counter to what the American people want, no matter where they are on the political divide. But the one thing to keep in mind is Egypt essentially controlled, well, it doesn't, it controls the Suez Canal. And that's a pretty important world trade, especially energy trade route. And I think our interest is that we want stability as opposed to civil war there for the reason that we want that canal open. And, of course, we've put ourselves in that position because we haven't built the proper infrastructure to unleash our own energy resources in this country. So we are reliant on flow through that Suez and the Straits of Hormuz. And the only person that I remember talking about this in any way, well, two people, the non-interventionism was addressed by Ron Paul leading up to the last election, and the energy independence was addressed by Newt Gingrich, not by Romney, not by Obama, not by Bachman, Gain, or anybody else. So, you know, that to me is just validation of why the Republican Party totally failed in 2012, especially because of that dickhead Karl Rove. Because we shouldn't really have that much interest in this situation if we were truly non-interventionist in our foreign policy. The Egyptian people wouldn't be hating on us, and we wouldn't be that concerned about the Suez because we would be truly energy independent. But, you know, tax, you said you want to take a different tack on it. I think we do, because the important thing is we've got elections coming up in 2014. We've got elections coming up in 2016, and this kind of sentiment that's rolling around of being like the Egyptians or walking like the Egyptians is a little disconcerting. The fact is that what we are supposed to be like is, I don't know, Americans. If you're looking for someone to emulate, how about our founding fathers as opposed to Egyptians? So, you know, that's my take on it. If you all want to discuss it, please call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. If you are listening live in Blog Talk Radio, right under the show icon, there's a button that says follow. If you click on that, You will get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile and affiliated email as to when our show is broadcasting. And if you're on Facebook, please go to the Tex and Rex show page. Like the page, and you'll get notifications in your timeline news feed of when we're broadcasting and other relevant information that we put out there. One of the things that we need to address is that one of our regular guests, who will be joining us shortly, has a group on Facebook called Coalition of Freedoms. That's F-R-E-E-D-O-M-S, plural. It is the same group that he's had for, the past year or so, but it is under a new tag in Facebook. So if you've been in Coalition of Freedom, get yourself moved over to Coalition of Freedoms. There is a link in the original group. And if you haven't been there, think about joining, because this is a group focused on trying to analyze the situations as regards electoral politics, and also build coalitions across wide groups that agree on fundamentals: conservatives, conservatarians, libertarians, principled liberals, what have you. Because unless the people in this country unite, which is one thing you can tip your hat towards the Egyptians for, our electoral politics are going to keep falling apart, and the duopoly is going to keep dominant, and we're going to keep losing our liberties. Rather than suspending our Constitution and devolving into civil war or a military dictatorship, how about we just restore the vision our founding fathers gave us? And with that introduction to Coalition of Freedoms, I am going to bring on our regular guest. Chris, you're live with Tex and Rex.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Chris.
Are you down
here
on vacation? Good. Working on my deck, or my patio and my deck.
There you go.
But I'll sit down for a while. I was getting ready to beat some flashing flat, but I won't do that on the air. Egypt's an interesting situation. I know we've been discussing this. The threat on it is growing like crazy. I don't think anything that we did in Egypt in the first place was right, and it helped. I know Obama did a little speech recently where he was saying, we never did this. We weren't part of this. We didn't back Morsi. Right, just like we're not backing organ-eating killers, Satanists, jihadists in Syria either. So, it's a mess. And it is, you nailed it, because from us who have taken the time to study Newt's policies and his part in the primary, unlike people who just listen to their handlers and, want to call Newt a neocon, New World Order, but people who actually do the research for themselves, like we have, he had an incredible foreign policy solution, and that was get the hell out of the world and come back and take care of our own energy resources, which we have up the gazoo, not as much as Russia, but definitely as much as China has. And we could become energy independent. Then we could let these people, do whatever the hell they do in the Middle East to themselves, to each other, to everybody around them, from now until end times, and leave them the hell alone. We can never, anybody who's ever studied the Middle East in depth knows that nobody ever makes the right decision because we don't understand them. That's the first problem. We keep
trying to understand each other.
They don't understand themselves, so how can we understand them?
Yeah, exactly. They've been fighting for 1,400 years, over the issue of succession to Muhammad. There's so many different sects. Unless you get into this and you understand it, you just listen to the news, you don't have a clue what's going on over there. And the whole Middle East is getting ready into some monstrous uprising. This Muslim Brotherhood Sunni caliphate's been climbing for years, and it's getting more and more and more powerful. And for some reason, we keep funding it and backing it. You got Saudi and Qatar, which is just a monster money pit, pouring money into all these different things. Qatar is backing Palestine at the same time it's backing the rebels in Syria. We can't play this game. It is a different world, different culture, different religion, and we keep messing around. England messed it up, and then we came in and took it over, and we messed it up in our own way. Here we are. Here we sit. and it's going to lead to world war. You know, and you guys know I've been studying the Syria situation pretty hard, you know, that's just another microcosm of what's wrong with our foreign policy, their internal policies, and the whole world view of what the hell we should and shouldn't do in the Middle East. It's a mess.
Well, Chris, it seems like we are being used by people within our own gates, as well as various parties across the world, and especially those in the Middle East. We are being used to finance and fund with military equipment basically forces that are trying to give us a reprise of what Saladin did when yep. when the Crusader kingdoms fell, which is create the Egyptian-Syrian caliphate, essentially. And you know, if you're an American or if you're an Israeli, that's probably not a very good prospect.
In that vein, wouldn't Morsi's ouster then be a good thing?
Because it depends on what you replace him with.
Brotherhood. Exactly.
Depends on what
you replace him or who comes after, but I can tell you it's probably not going to be more Muslim Brotherhood. Because what is going to be the point of this? You have people, so what happened was you had an initial revolution there, which was inspired by the people rising up and saying we're tired of Mubarak, and the United States had to dump Mubarak, which actually is not easy to do. Because he's our ally that we've supported for years, and it looks bad to your other allies. If all of a sudden you dump one of your current allies sort of without notice, that makes the other ones a bit shaky on you and your reliability when already the U.S. has kind of a dubious record when it comes to reliability in some of these situations, for reasons that I won't get into. So you get rid of Mubarak, and then you're, okay, we're going to support, you know, whatever comes down the pike in these elections will support the democratic process, and out of that you get Muslim Brotherhood, and so we start working with them. It wasn't necessarily our choice, but that's what happened at the ballot box. This person won, so now you have to work with that current government because Egypt has been a United States client state for, you know, basically since the Camp David Accords. So now you have to work with who the legitimate person is, and they're doing the wrong thing, but you're stuck working with them. And now that people have risen up and said, hey, this isn't what the Mubarak revolution was about, you know, to get rid of him, we didn't want to put this guy in. And so now you're stuck again because people want something different. So you got to play both sides. And, you know, we're saying, look, okay, if you have a new government here, the Islamic Brotherhood has to be at the table, because if they're not at the table, then you have an illegitimate government again.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's chaotic.
What's legitimate?
What's
legitimate
is what's accepted by the Egyptian people. What's legitimate is what's accepted by the Egyptian people, and the Egyptian people are saying, we don't like this guy, we don't like the direction that our country is going, and therefore the Demos has risen up and said, fuck this, you know, we want something different. Now,
well,
that's
didn't
not to
the
say
Demos...
That,
didn't the Demos, meaning Greek for people, weren't they the ones that originally voted for Morsi in the first place?
No, because the opposition, the reformers, were split among something like 9 different candidates.
That's besides the point. That's what they chose to do that. Isn't that the way that democracy works?
Didn't the Republicans choose Mitt Romney then?
No.
You know?
The vote wasn't so much split as it was stolen, but that's a different issue. It wasn't a popular election. That was a Republican delegate election, small r Republican, as opposed to democracy. My point, I was being a little punchy, but my point is that it seems that, first of all, there's two things to think about. One is what's wrong with the Egyptian mindset where they can't make up their mind about who they want. Well, you know, perhaps that's because they don't have – 1,000 years worth of tradition and development to build
right.
up to, quote, democracy. And number two, perhaps democracy is a bad idea. Oh, no, Rex,
yeah.
We're a democracy. Are you saying democracy is a bad? Yeah, I'm saying democracy is a bad friggin' idea. Ask Athens. Athens always becomes Sparta or falls because democracy sucks. It's the will of the 51% majority, whoever can sway them, over the rest of the minority. And in a split, like the one that Tex was just talking about, where the, quote, reformers had, you know, 12 guys running, so the vote was split, or essentially what happened with the last primary. I agree with you, Tex, on that one. with that kind of split, then you get a powerful minority that can sway things or manipulate things to essentially rule with an iron fist. Democracy is nothing more than a pretext for oligarchy. Go with that.
You're on. You're right on. I don't think people understand this, guys. I really don't. I don't think we've been using this word. I mean, I gave you that link earlier today from that guy. It was like 1950s. He had a show from the 50s to the 70s. And he was talking about the difference between a democracy and a republic. And he was talking about back then how they were changing the wording in the national dialogue and in the news media, that we were a democracy, and he was going, this is a lie. We are not a democracy, and there's a reason we're not a democracy. And they've gradually, because they know if they give people enough shit and pay them off enough in this country and dummy them down to the school system, if they can sway that vote, then they can destroy this country and turn it into some, you know, modern Marxist, socialist, whatever the hell, you know, they're planning in the White House at this point in time. Sorry, Tex, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is that you just advance an argument that the Egyptian people elected this, right, and so we should honor the election, and then now you're saying that the election of the people, democracy doesn't matter. The Egyptian people need to work this out. I don't have an interest in the outcome of Egyptian politics, okay? I don't care, really. However the Egyptians want to run their country is what the Egyptians should do. It's not really my affair, okay, whether they're a democracy or a republic. I think republics are better. I think the American Constitution is better, but it's good for us. Is it good for the whole world? There are difficulties in the way the American electoral system works, which is where power is balanced against power, and so nothing can get done. And in a mature political society, that type of arrangement of power is beneficial because we can tolerate levels of political disagreement. Other countries may not necessarily be able to tolerate that same level of discord at the political level that we can. So is a republic going to be best for Egypt? I don't know. You know, and I'm not going to say that I know. All I'm going to say is whatever Egypt wants to do, the people of Egypt want, the people of Egypt should get, and then they'll be essentially happy with their political system, and they'll, you know, stop going from revolution to revolution, because once you enter a period of instability, which is what they've done, they've entered a period of political instability, and the likelihood that they'll have another revolution in a year or a year and a half is pretty freaking high, because if they keep getting the outcome that the Egyptian people don't like, they're going to keep going into revolution. So the best thing
or civil war.
Well, they're probably going into civil war right now. So then you have the outcome, whatever the outcome of that civil war is going to result in some new political reality, and that political reality ought to be what the Egyptian people actually want, because if it's not, you have two essentially outcomes that are going to come from that. The first outcome is going to be that the Egyptian people will be repressed by the government that they don't really want, but at that point there's been a big war, and they're like, well, it's not really what I want, but I don't want to fight anymore, and I'm tired, and, you know, just whatever the hell, you just... So I can do whatever you want, I'll go back and do what I did for all the years that Mubarak was in charge, you know. Or you have a government that accurately reflects what the Egyptian people want, and they're not going to want to go into revolution because they're like, yes, this is what we're agitating for. Okay, so now, because the government's basically running the way that I want or close enough that I don't care anymore, I'm going to go back and live my life and not worry about things political except, you know, when I'm voting and at my local level.
Yeah.
Those are the two outcomes.
Well, Go ahead, Chris.
No, Chris, you go.
Well, one of the dynamics that, you know, to throw into the mix in this conversation is the Sharia law crowd. You know, you've got that group in there. They're about a 30%, give or take,
groups
of the
Sharia law group.
And they're all, groups, all these different groups. Yeah, it's not just Muslim Brotherhood. And
well,
these
exactly.
people
Several.
Will not, they will not stop until they have Nazi control over other people's lives. And that's one of the
They haven't stopped in 14 centuries, Chris. They're not going to stop now. You're 100% right. But here's the interesting thing, and this is what I want to kind of bring it up on. Tex said clearly, I don't care what Egypt does. It's their business. Well, that's probably the sentiment of 99% of Americans. But Big Fed seems to think that they need to stick their finger and our money in every aspect of this thing. And the thing that's amazing to me, and I think that it was pretty cogent point that Tex brought up, you know, is we look kind of incompetent when we keep backing guys and then turning on our, quote, you know, allies like Mubarak. It seems that,
we
looked
incompetent 4.5 years ago.
Yeah,
sorry.
We elected an incompetent community organizer, and this is what you get.
A community organizer in the most powerful country in the world. Are you flipping kidding me? Sorry,
well,
go
look,
ahead.
He got caught with his pants down. Now it's easy to jump on it and say, hey, look, we told you he's a community organizer, he's an idiot, he got caught with his pants down. But just keep in mind something. Whether you like it or not, whether you voted for him or not, he does hold the office of POTUS, and he hasn't been impeached, and it doesn't look like little Johnny Boehner is going to do anything about it, even though there's umpteen reasons to actually impeach him and maybe even possibly convict him through an impeachment. But the Republicans aren't doing that because they're pussies. So he's the guy that's out there that's essentially your diplomatic face, and he's mucking it all up. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is he truly incompetent? Or is he intentionally trying to make us look like assholes and engender more and more enemies across the globe?
No,
makes you kind of wonder.
I think it's just laziness. You know, any explanation that's you know that convoluted, I think it's just basically he doesn't care anymore because he's lost interest. It's a difficult job, and I think he's checked out. You know, he's going up, going through the motions, reading the papers, all that kind of stuff. He's probably engaged on a few issues that are close to his heart, and he doesn't really care about foreign policy because obviously the foreign policy he expressed when he was running is not being executed now. And I think he got, you know, basically arm wrestled down into someone else's policy early on in his administration because he didn't know what he was doing or getting into. In the first place, and he's given up on foreign policy. And he's like, that's the purview of these people who forced whatever their policy was on me, and so I don't care anymore. And he's like, I'm just going to go chill at the White House and watch Jay-Z perform or whatever it is.
Spend $100 million of your money so I can golf in Africa.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, literally, I think that's where he is. He's just like, you know, and since he's a lame duck, he's just going to sit there and run out the clock and all this other stuff. He's like, oh, great, I got to go talk to Putin. That guy's, you know, probably going to be putting his foot on my neck. And you know what? Whatever. At the end of the day, I'm still going to be back at the golf course doing my thing, hanging out, living the life. And that's, I think, what his key focus is. He's completely checked out.
Well, whatever his reasons are, he's making us look terrible. He's making us look absolutely weak. Putin, who's actually, in my opinion, level-headed and doing some good things, is exploiting these weaknesses. And frankly, I don't like to be exploited no matter how screwed up the idiots in Washington are, which is why, you know, if people would just sit back and listen calmly to people like Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul without prejudice, because those two names, when you mention them, when you say, you know, Ron Paul said, oh, Ron Paul's kooky, he's crazy. Or Newt Gingrich said, that neocon son of a bitch. Just sit back objectively and listen to what both of them say. And they come at things from slightly different perspectives on some issues, very different perspectives. But even during the primary debates, Ron Paul acknowledged that Newt was the closest one on that Republican stage to him. They have some major disagreements. But if you just sit back and listen to the both of them and kind of glean from them their wisdom, because they're both very wise about these things, you would realize that we do have to extend power. We are the world hegemonic power right now. That's just a fact. We can't create a vacuum that's going to be filled by somebody who might be even more dangerous than we have been. So you do have to extend that power, but you have to do it responsibly, and you have to push towards a primary non-interventionist policy, except in places where things are fairly key. Unfortunately, Egypt is one of those key places. Why? Well, we're the ones that propped up Mubarak for 4 decades, which caused these problems. We pushed Morsi, which caused this problem. And it looks like maybe some of the globalists are kind of done with their community organizer because they're letting him eat wind on this one and trying to push in, you know, their guys. They got Al-Baradei and a bunch of other guys. So there's a lot of players in this, but let's not forget something. We are not energy independent. There's no way technically that we will be before late 2015, possibly 2016, because these things take time to build. And the Suez Canal is of strategic importance. We cannot have Egypt fall into civil war through our incompetence when you got some dildo like Kerry over trying to negotiate a peace agreement with the Palestinians and the Israelis, which no one's been able to accomplish in 60 years. The closest thing that you came to a peace agreement was actually with Egypt, you know, the Camp David Accords, and that was mostly Sadat's doing. And what was his reward? What was Sadat oh, that's right, the Muslim Brotherhood assassinated him. Oh, freaking wonderful. So this has been going on for 40 years, and we've been on the wrong side of the equation most of that time. But it is important. But the real issue is that you have to have a principled foreign policy, especially when we don't have money, and you look like assholes when you're over there funding, like Chris said, organ-eating jihadi terrorists, who you put number one on your war on terror. You're now funding them against a secular Arab regime that was actually stable, and now we've got this problem in Egypt. The whole thing is a powder keg. Little non-interventionism might go a long way to calming these fears. But the fundamental problem that we want to focus on is what Tech said. You know, what are the Egyptians going to choose? Republican, democracy, monarchy, whatever. Well, that's their business. But the simple fact is that democracy as a concept is nothing other than the will of the people. And let's face it, for the most part, the will of the people will be capricious. It's whatever is immediately gratifying. And you can see that because, like he said, the incompetent community organizer was elected, even though we have a, quote, Republican small R electoral system. It was, you know, relatively popular these days with the duopoly. It was elected because of all the free shit he promised to his constituents. Well, that's the kind of crap you get in a democracy where everybody's running around.
Game over, man. You know? It's game over.
You know, and democracies will eventually devolve into an oligarchy because of this kind of crap. And so the real question you have to ask yourself is, given where we are, not only our foreign entanglements in Egypt and Syria, but given where we are as a country, where we are as a society, where our politics are, where the duopoly has a grip, where people are fed up with it, do we know what the difference is between a democracy, which everybody's calling for in Egypt, and a republic? I mean, guys, what would you say? Do you think that we as Americans know the difference?
Well, the average American,
no.
Do we know the difference?
No.
No, because we don't understand that we have a republic ourselves. But, of course, we've done everything we could over the past 100 years, 100-plus years, to undermine the concept of a republic here by having direct election of senators, which essentially turns them into the House of Representatives, but, you know, with a filibuster. And, you know, we've been watering down the representative nature of the republic. The Electoral College doesn't function anymore. All the sort of republic forms, a lot of them we've gotten rid of as we try to head more toward democracy, you know, pure democracy or true democracy, whatever you call it. So republican forms are being eroded, but look, as the republican forms are eroded, people are less and less happy. So I would say, you know, having a bunch of people who don't pay attention all vote and have their will expressed when they don't really know what they're voting on in the first place, it's probably not a good idea. That's why representative democracy was viewed as being the superior outcome. We've had democracies before in history. They rise up. The passions of the people can be swayed. The people are very emotional. You know, that's what a governor is. It was from Latin, a gubernator, somebody who could sail over the seas because the passions of the people, the ancients believed, could be whipped up just like the wind can whip up the waves on the ocean. They can overturn the entire boat, right? So you need a good gubernator or navigator, you know, sailor, to run the ship in order to navigate through these waves. Well, a republic was designed to put brakes on it in place already, so the passions of the people would be expressed in the House of Representatives, where the people had, you know, they were very close to the power. House of Representatives would go express the will of the people, and then we'd go to the Senate, and the Senate would, okay, but that's crazy, so we're not going to do that, but we'll, you know, do something kind of similar to make sure that you guys, we understand the message of how the people think about this. But what we've been doing is eroding that. We're getting more and more, you know, democratic small d, and somebody said democratic large d too, but democratic small d. And as a result, people are less and less happy because they want something after 9/11, like, oh, my God, we totally need the Patriot. You know, we need the NSA to listen in on everyone's call and, you know, make a record of it and store all my data everywhere. And then later on, it's like, oh, God, you know, maybe we don't need, maybe that was a bad idea. Why did my government do that? Well, I don't know. Right after this thing happened, everybody was like, I don't know, just give them the authority. So that's kind of the problem with democracy, which is the issue that you're raising. So, you know, what's good for Egypt? I don't know. I don't pretend to know. Something, they want something else. So they're going to get something else. If the next thing they're going to get better at a certain point, it's like playing 21, you know. Do you want the next card or not? You know, or are you going to go bust? And what they're saying is we're going to take we're going to, you know, flip the card on this one and see if we go bust or not, but we want something different.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like one of those things where when we get like some kind of bad disaster or terrorist attack or something, or somebody has to make sure this never happens again. We have to do something. They always say we have to do something. But they never tell you what that something is. You know, last time we had a terrible terrorist attack here, they said we had to do something, and now they're storing all your friggin' emails and phone calls. So, you know, it's not always a good idea to just do something. Sometimes it's a good idea to think about what you're going to do before you do it. But like you said, let the Egyptians do whatever the hell the Egyptians are going to do. But the real question is, we're operating this country like it's a democracy when it isn't. And, you know, like to hear Chris's thoughts on it, because it seems like people are running around going, this is a democracy. Whatever we vote for, that's what we're going to get. So it's the will of the majority, the will of the people. And then
now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man.
Maybe restoring the republic's a good idea, Chris. Or
they
not.
Got to Chris.
They got the Chris. The NSA picked him up. Crap.
There, I was on mute.
Six
they had
under.
They
oh,
had
he's
me
back
muted.
To the dead. There he is.
One of the things I really believe that's important is education. I just think, you know, I think that's what Ron Paul really did, was he educated a large swath of America across all gender lines, age groups, you know, generations, military, races of people. I mean, because what he did was he was an educator. And, you know, you could argue that he didn't get a lot done in Congress, but, man, out on the public sphere, he taught people about our financial system and why we're broke and why you work harder and harder and harder decade after decade. He opened people's eyes to the massive intervention in other countries. I mean, we have conflicts that we're funding and putting men's our youth lives at risk in 74 places around this country, and the average American doesn't even know that. You know, they focus on Egypt or kind of maybe on Syria, you know, because they finally talk about it a little bit on the news. You know, you have to go to foreign news sources to get any information. And I just don't think people realize it. Ron Paul got a lot of crap for it, but I've learned a lot from him. He made me ask questions and do the research. So for people who give a crap, I mean, there's a lot of people in this country are clueless. You know, you see the guys that do these street videos, these street interviews, and ask these questions, people don't even know what the hell the 4th of July was about. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, the ignorance of the people in this country. But I also know there's a lot of people who aren't, and they do give a shit. And they do want our country to survive, and they don't want to be taken over by a communist manifesto. And they see what's going on in our school systems and the issues, you know, with our traditional values and things like that. So there's a lot of people out there that care, but I think that even in those ranks of people, there's still a lot of clueless people. So I really believe it's a matter of education, because we're not going to change this overnight. We're not going to have an Egyptian, you know, uprising, at least I hope
overnight.
Not. Overnight.
Please, no, thanks.
I mean, yeah.
Let's not do that.
Not yet. Not until I get moved away from Seattle. So if it, you know, bombs drop here, I'm not close to them. Because I'm too close to military bases. But you know what I'm saying. But I really believe that it's a process that people need to get educated. I think that's what we've been doing for, God, since we've known each other. You know, it's this constant. That's why I manage a group, you know, which honestly, every morning I get up thinking I should shut the damn thing down, because it's a lot of time and effort. And people want to post freaking news of the day and pictures of this and that and the other and conspiracy theories. And you're like, God, give me a break. Focus. you know, on the things that matter. When you talk, and Rex, yeah. you say this so well, you know, it whether you're a little L or a little D Democrat or a Libertarian or a conservative or a Tea Party or a Christian or whatever, you've got to find those common ground items and stick to them and quit arguing over the stupid shit, you know,
yep.
because all this stupid stuff ain't going to matter if we turn into a communist state, which is so freaking close, and people don't understand it. I've been tracking this shit my whole life because my mother was a
yeah.
sociology history major, so she shoved this, you know, she shoved Cold War novels into my hands at a very young age, you know, so I read all the spy shit.
Yes,
and then she taught me, yeah, and then she educated me on society and cause and effect and our Constitution. And, you know, I was ruined at a very young age for being able to ignore shit. You know what I mean? I
yeah.
wish I could just shut it off and live like everybody else around my neighborhood because they're freaking clueless around me.
You can't unknow what you know.
Yeah, it's really sucks sometimes, you know.
Well, you know, knowledge is a burden sometimes.
It is, but,
well,
you know,
exactly.
so
and,
here we are.
Yeah, and what you're right. saying, Chris, is essentially the people need to educate themselves, and really they need to educate themselves and become involved in the process. And if everyone's going to do the de minimis, right, which is what Americans do right now, which is, you know, complain to their friends, you don't believe in
That's
all this,
worthless.
What's going on, and hogwash and whatever, you know, if you're going to do the de minimis, change the de minimis. You need to be more informed about what's going on. You need to get involved. You need to start going to meetings. Now, which meetings you go to, I don't know, or maybe you need to go to several different meetings in order to get the ideas out there that you want and start having candidates that espouse the things that you believe. And then when you vote for them and you get elected, yeah, when you vote for them and they get elected and you're happy about the outcome, great, my guy got elected. You have to hold him accountable because you have people like Marco Rubio running, oh, I'm Tea Party all the way, and then they get elected, and they do completely the opposite, which this is repeated, you know, not just to pick on Marco Rubio, but there are
no, please
many
do.
Other candidates, yeah, exactly, hundreds of other candidates across the country who do the same thing. They pander to you and say that this is what I'm going to do, and so you think you have a social contract with them. So now I'm going to vote for you because you said you're going to do this, and this is what I support, and I vote for you. But it turns out you didn't have the contract because the contract was to the people who were giving him money for his campaign, which is, hey, when you get elected, will you do this for me? It's like, I'll totally do that for you, right? And so the people with the actual contract who have the deed to the seat, right, because they paid for it, they've got the real contract, and meanwhile, they don't care if he – whatever he says to get elected, once he gets in there, or she gets in there, they do – whatever the people who actually have the contract. You don't have a contract, and that's the problem. So you have to stay engaged and make sure that once you elect the person when they're in office, that they do what they said that they were going to do, and then bring it to light, expose them when they don't stand up for the principles that they said they were going to run for in the first place. And then you can
yep.
do things like recalls, write them letters, change their opinions. I mean, I think, realistically, I think Marco Rubio right now is having a major oh crap moment where he realized, I think I've lost the people and lost the support of the people by doing what I was doing. So now he's trying to get back into their good graces by issuing apologies, probably so that he can screw us later. But I do think at this point he's realized he's done the wrong thing. And that, you know, maybe his political future is not going to be that long, but that's okay. They'll give him a bunch of money. He'll probably get reelected because he's been doing what the leadership wants. The leadership always takes care of their own. They're busy purging the actual conservatives. But none of that can happen if people are informed. No matter how much money
yep.
you have on a media campaign, if people are informed and involved, they know exactly what's going on.
Yep. Ted Cruz proved that. Ted
yeah,
Cruz
people
proved
are,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Because if people are plugged into the Fox News or the MSLSD or the Certainly Not News, then they're not going to get this stuff. They're going to get, you know, sensationalist crap, vapid bullshit spewed to you by, you know, big boob blondes and muscled guys with small brains. And they manage things. They cut videos. They edit them in a way to, you know, and they distract you with stuff like this airplane crash, which is a horrible tragedy. But we also had five people killed in a train track. That didn't get as much play, and more people die on America's highways daily, but, you know, that's just to distract you. And I think you're right. Informed is key. because, you know, the only reason that we have a Republican, the only reason it's lasted this long, and let's keep in mind something, we get accused of being the new kid on the block. We're a young country. Egypt's over 10,000 years old. Not this Egypt. You know, France has been around for 1,000 years. Not this France. This is what, like the fourth republic? You know, we have the oldest republic and the oldest constitution in existence today. And the reason for that is because we were informed, we were involved, and we had a true diffusion of power. And the most important aspect of a republic is that it is not the will of the majority. It is not the will of the people. It is not the will of the oligarchs. It is the rule of law. And the sovereigns, which is we the people, give authority through delegation to certain statesmen, they're not supposed to be politicians, to put together the laws within specific parameters that everybody from the president on down is subject to. But that's not how it's working today. We have a de facto democracy run as an oligarchy. It's time to get back to that. I do have a really crappy audio. It's about a minute and a half, but you brought
you
up
to that, Rex, I want to say something really quick about the age of the countries. The countries may be old, and people may have lived there for a long time, but these people haven't lived there for a long time, and these governments haven't been around for a very long time, and you're talking now about institutional memory. To what extent do the people remember the institutions that their government is set up and governed by? Egypt is not 40,000 years old, but Egypt goes back quite a bit. You know, it is a modern state. It was created after colonialism, and now it's only about a year and a half old because they just had a revolution. So Egypt's institutional memory of how to govern in this situation is very short. They don't know. They threw the roadmap out the window, and everybody's got to figure it out from there. And institutional memory is really only a generation, because every generation has to be educated as to where their government stands, what their political allegiances are, you know, what are the law of the land, how do things work here. You go through this education as you're a child. And in the United States, the problem is people have been forgetting the Constitution and our social contract that we have with government. And when everybody forgets what the rules are, then anything goes, because then all of a sudden it's whatever the whims of the people are, like, oh, I think it should be this, I think it should be that. But the people are always less powerful than the people in charge. And the people in charge are like, oh, there's nobody minding the store, so we're going to do whatever we want. And you have the situation that you have currently today. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. Those countries are not older than ours. Our country is older. And the problem that we're having now is we're starting to forget the basic principles. Yeah, exactly.
We're about to elect President Macho Camacho.
Hey, President Camacho is pretty good. He's got a good name. I like that. Camacho. It makes us sound powerful, right? We can stand up to Putin with President Camacho.
That's right. We could even have him come to the Monday night rehabilitation.
Yeah,
big monster truck.
Exactly.
We could get President Macho Camacho in one monster truck and put in another. They can go at it, and that's how we can sell our differences. Whoa, yeah. Idiocracy is alive and well.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's important, and this goes back to the education aspect, it's important that we don't forget the foundation of our country and what principles it's based on and how we've deviated from them and how those deviations have led to the problems that we're experiencing today. And the solutions to those are to go back to the original answers that we had and we inherited that worked so well for us for so long, rather than to, you know, drive further off, do more political off-roading, if you will, through the wilderness and hope we're going to find something, because there's nothing out there but tyranny. And nobody wants that, so start heading back to what we had originally, because it was a lot better.
Well, I mean, we haven't tried tyranny in a while.
In terms of governing
maybe we'll
principles,
like it.
Now, yeah, exactly. And we had a caller once who was talking about sort of the racial aspect of what was going on in early America. We certainly don't want to go back to that, but we're talking about our original governing principles and applying those original governing principles that at one time applied only to a small segment of the population should apply to all. But if we applied those principles to all, we would certainly be a lot better off.
Yep. No, that's an absolutely, you know, valid point, and I think that it's important for us to understand that. And the two things go hand in hand. What Chris was talking about with education and what you're talking about with institutional knowledge, they go hand in hand. And the way that we used to transmit this, okay, was in our communities and our families. And, of course, you know, sociologically, our families have been decimated over the last two or three generations, and we really almost have no sense of community. I mean, most people don't even know who their neighbors are. And one of the reasons for that is because we don't get out and talk to each other. Yeah, exactly. We don't get out and talk to each other. And the fact is that without a sense of community and stable families as the fabric of political life, you're going to simply have the mass propagandists swaying the public. And whether it's a republic under our Constitution or not, essentially it's a democracy. And basically right now our lives are being run through a democracy rather than a republic because of our abdication of our republican power, small r again, okay? And what's happening is that you have a de facto entrenched oligarchy, and that's why you have the duopoly. That's why you have two factions that appear to be fighting so that you can feel that sometimes you win and sometimes you lose, when in fact they're always winning and pushing forward the same agenda. And as you pointed out earlier, you know, Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He's got this foreign policy. That's right. He's got Dick Cheney's foreign policy. He's running with it. Whether he likes it or not, whether he's in support of it or not, I don't care. That's exactly what he's doing. You know, this whole drone thing, you know, and we're chasing Snowden down around the globe and sticking our hands in the wrong conflicts. And this is exactly what you will get when you have a democracy, because it then falls into the clique of interests who can sway the federal government's levers. And whether they're defense contractors who want to build more shit to blow up more shit, or whether it's Wall Street who wants to rape and pillage your pension accounts while paying themselves bonuses, government allows them to do that, which doesn't make government inherently bad. It just means that an appropriated government is bad. This is why we always talk about the text. We've been talking about this since we started the show over a year ago. Diffusion of power. Our founding fathers gave us a system that balanced one power against the other, the states against the federal government divided amongst three branches, so that you wouldn't have any one place where things could get done without debate, without consent, without deliberation. But that's effectively what we've got now, but it's not over. The Constitution is still the law of the land, whether it's being respected or not. And the fact is that if a nuke dropped on Washington, D.C. tomorrow...
Hold them to
it. Yeah. That's the whole point. Hold them to it. But let me think of it this way, right? If a nuke dropped on D.C. tomorrow, well, maybe not. I don't know if they're going to be back tomorrow. Maybe they are. But if all of them are here, Biden, Obama, all Congress, Supreme Court, everybody, if all was there and D.C. got wiped out, you had no federal government, would it be anarchy and chaos? I don't know. Let's think about this. You have 50 states. Each of them has a governor and a legislative body, sheriffs, police, roads. I don't think it would be chaos. Things would still function. That's the beauty of a confederated republic, because we have 50 sovereign governments. 13 of the original were the ones who actually created the federal government in order to coordinate things internationally amongst each other, but they were pre-existent to it. So if D.C. disappeared tomorrow...
Well, and not to mention what the federal government is supposed to be doing is actually listed and limited, and... Since that document was drawn up and agreed to by the states that, okay, we will submit to this as long as they govern in these areas, which you specifically listed, and we retain these rights, which we've also listed, everything's okay. And currently, that list is meaningless. Even though everybody can go and read the list, Congress doesn't care about the list anymore. And you know what? They're not going to care because the people haven't read the list either, and they're demanding all sorts of things, like, I want free ice cream. Like, oh, don't worry, I'll get you free ice cream. And they're like, well, I don't think you should give us free ice cream because that's not one of the things that you're entitled to do as a federal government. You know, maybe your state could give you free ice cream, but you shouldn't be getting it from the federal level. And the people are like, well, why do you hate free ice cream? And there's your problem, which is an education problem. This guy,
it's for the kids.
And this guy's trying to deny me my right to free ice cream. What's going on here?
It's for the kids.
Don't understand how the system works.
Why do you hate kids and ice cream?
To work.
Yeah, why do you hate kids and ice cream?
Why don't you like the kids? What do you hate about ice cream? This guy's anti-ice cream. Don't listen to him. He's not going to give you ice cream.
That's the exact kind of stupidity that sways most people. And the fact is that we can bitch about it, we can complain about it, or we can do something about it. And what that's something to do about it is, instead of running around your mouth around without thinking for 2 seconds, oh, we should walk like an Egyptian, how about you stand like an American and you inform other people how our process works. Oh, I don't know, Rex. How does it work? Well, you know what? We've given you multiple resources to look it up, to read it, to understand that Dr. Edwin Vieira has a lot of great information about the Constitution, Judge Napolitano, Ron Paul. We've got a lot of people who are actually telling us how these things work and having an open debate about where it stands and how it should be applied. Learn and teach others and get them involved. One of the ways to learn is go to our Facebook page, The Tex and Rex Show on Facebook. Like the page, and you will get notifications in your news feed timeline of when we're broadcasting, as well as other important information that we send out. You can join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, where we put all the clips and videos and articles that we use on some of our shows. And, of course, Coalition of Freedoms, that's plural, freedoms, on Facebook, Chris's group, where there is real in-depth discussion about the issues that are affecting our policies, especially electoral issues, so that we can find areas of common agreement. Because the fact is that most Americans who are involved, I'm not talking about the Kim Kardashian followers and the, you know, distracted, mindless minions. I'm talking about people that actually go out and vote, have a broad agreement on how things should work, but most of them feel powerless or are uninformed. It is up to you to get them involved. And you better start doing it now, because in Virginia and New Jersey, we've got elections this year. 2014 is coming up. That's going to be huge. Is it going to be a referendum on Obama's overreach, delay of Obamacare, which is probably illegal? Or is it going to be a referendum on the Republicans, who haven't really done anything conservative the whole time that they've been there, despite having real heavy-hitting conservatives like Justin Amash, Trey Gowdy, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul? You know, Chris was talking about Ted Cruz earlier. Maybe after this clip you can talk about how Ted Cruz proved that that you can win elections on conservative principles as opposed to pandering. Because and you brought him up earlier, Tex, Marco Rubio. Well, both of them happen to be descendants of Cuban immigrants. Both of them are allegedly Tea Party conservatives. But they're playing things in quite different ways, and they won in quite different ways, and I think that'd be a good conversation to have. But what I want to tell everybody is that the important thing is to get other people involved and learn the difference between a republic and a democracy, and don't use the words interchangeably. That's a trick of the enemy. They're trying to pervert the language in order to control your thoughts so that you can't think of the difference between a republic and a democracy. And do you think that it's an accident that the parties that control every precinct and have a duopoly control over Washington, D.C., chose the names Republican and Democrat? There's nothing Democratic about the Republicans, and there's nothing nothing Democratic about the Democrats, and nothing Republican about the Republicans. Those are just parties, private groups. They will be what their membership makes them, okay? The Democrats have been more conservative in the past. The Republicans have been horrible in the past. They've been better in the past. They're worse now, whatever. These parties change because it is up to the members of these private organizations to make things happen and who they run for candidates. So the idea of thinking that the other side is the enemy and as long as you defeat them with your side, you win, is a lie. Understand what the real difference is between republic and democracy. We're going to have this conversation, talk about Ted Cruz on the other side. It's a minute and a half clip here. It's Rand Paul. The audio is kind of not the best, but it's the only thing I could find on this topic. It's about a minute and a half long, and I think it's pretty important. This is Rand talking about education and the difference between democracy and republic, and we'll have a conversation on the other side. If you'd like to chime in, we've got about an hour left, 646-649-1013. Here's Dr. Rand Paul.
One topic that every elementary school kid, every junior high kid, every high school kid should have to learn about, and that we should teach our leaders because they don't know it either, is that we are not a democracy. We don't want to go around the world fighting for democracy. We're not a democracy. We are a republic. And a republic is a democratically elected government, but it's restrained by a document. The Constitution restrains. We have enumerated powers. This is all the government's supposed to do, is what the Constitution gave it in power. And it is restrained. And that is so important, but so misunderstood. If you have a pure democracy, 50% of the people could vote to take away your rights. 50% of the people could say, well, Italians should be slaves or black people should be slaves. We have restraints in our government. The majority cannot decide to take away rights from the minority. And even if the majority in Congress decides to do so, we're supposed to have a restraint in Congress, in the Supreme Court, to check them. And it worked for a long time. It hasn't worked until recently. For the last 40 or 50 years since the New Deal, the Supreme Court's just been a rubber stamp for all these things that have, I think, been going away from constitutional restrictions. There's been a little bit of going back in the other direction recently. They struck down part of the McCain-Feingold bill. Could have been even better, but they did strike down part of it that says a taxpayer group, like I have a taxpayer group in Kentucky, it's actually been illegal for me to spend money to say that my local congressman voted to raise your taxes. I could be put in jail and fined $50,000 for buying advertising, which sounds about as un-American as you can imagine. And they did strike it partially down with the recent Supreme Court ruling.
Sorry, this is not a great audio, but basically Rand was talking about, and this is important to know because Rand is currently a senator in your Senate from Kentucky, okay? And that's important to understand because every time you mention Rand Paul, people think that, oh, you're talking about 2016. 2016 is a long ways away. In the Commonwealth here, we have an election this year for governor and AG and lieutenant governor and all our legislature. Next year, you've got the entire House and a third of the Senate up. So there's a long way to go before we get to 2016. So when you talk about Rand Paul, 2016 might be nice to entertain. But keep in mind that he's up there right now. He's up there with Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and the other wacko birds preventing the Democrats and the Republicans from, well, destroying everything. Now, that doesn't mean that they're winning. In fact, a lot of times their votes are losses. But they're at least a voice that is challenging their own party and the other side in all these increasingly crazy things that they're doing, like this gangster 8 bill, like funding Al-Qaeda in Syria, like backing the wrong guys in Egypt that's about to devolve into civil war, like the NSA thing. You know, remember, Rand Paul did a 13-hour filibuster ostensibly on drones, but it really was about your Fourth and Fifth Amendments, which if you don't know what they are, get informed. Read them, understand them, know what they mean. You cannot defend rights if, first, you don't know what they are, and, B, you don't know what your founding document of government disallows the federal government to do. Remember, the Constitution doesn't give you a single right. You were born with those rights. What the Constitution does is it tells the government what it may do and, most importantly, what it may not do. But that's just a piece of paper unless it's enforced, and you can't enforce a law that you don't understand, which brings us to the point of what Rand was talking about. In a democracy, the majority, and it isn't really the majority will of the people, it's whoever can sway a majority of the voters can get whatever they want. So if they decide that they want to rape and pillage the other 49%, there is no legal way to stop them. In a republic, it is the rule of law. And the rule of law that, unlike in a absolutist monarchy or dictatorship, it is the rule of law that applies to everybody, including those who are making the laws and those who are enforcing them. That is the beauty of our system. So know the difference between a republic and a democracy. That's what Rand was talking about. Chris, you want to chime in on that, and then we'll go to Tex?
No, I think it's very important. I don't think people understand it. You know, when you have a representative government, the idea is that you have – and in our concept of delegates and all those types of things that are all part of our confusing to most people, our primary system and all that. And the idea, and what you said was so important, can you imagine if 51% of the people all hated a certain race of people and it was a democracy? I mean, they could vote in the annihilation of that race of people or turning them into second-class citizens. Or they could, you know, vote to suspend court systems and habeas corpus. This is so important for people to understand. We have a representative or Republican system for a reason, and that's then what Rand was saying is balanced against that Constitution and the Bill of Rights that holds them from going ass wild in Washington, D.C. I mean, look at the crap they get away with in the system that we have today. Can you imagine if we were a pure democracy? It would have been over 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Because you get people in there who think they got it all figured out, and they figure out how things should be. Can you imagine? We bitch and complain about, you know, the NSA and the EPA and all these different organizations, you know, every time we turn around, what kind of toilets we can buy, what kind of light bulbs we can buy. Can you imagine if they had all the power they wanted? You know, you'd be screwed. They'd walk in and go, sorry, but your retirement account is ours. 51% voted us in, and we have the power to change that. And all the money you work for your whole damn life, sorry, the government needs it. You no longer have it. That's how serious this is. And that and is amazing to me that the average citizen does not understand that that's what we're becoming. And you may like it when your guy's in power or your group's in power because they give you more shit. And they go and fight the wars you agree with, and then the next group gets in. You know, it's going to get worse and worse and worse unless people wake up. You know, and it will be in Egypt soon, you know, if people don't wake up. That's my opinion.
Yeah. No, that's a very valid point. I think, you know, that extreme example that Chris just gave, first of all, one could say de facto we're already there. But remember something, that what they do unofficially it doesn't mean that we've given it official sanction, and that's what we're talking about. Like in Egypt, you know, they want to give official sanction to their version of democracy. We are still officially a republic, even though we're operating like a democracy. But the important thing is that, you know, democratically elected and putting, you know, trying to exterminate a certain race or group of people, that could never happen, right? Hitler was democratically elected. He killed 16 million people outside of the people that were killed in the actual war, 6 million of them just because of their religious and ethnic affiliation,
right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And it so, you know, it does happen. It's happened here. Oh, it'll never happen in America, right, Rex? I don't know. Ask any Japanese citizen who's lived in this country most of their life or all their life, and Japanese American who's 70 years of age or older, and ask them how they feel about being put in the internment camps in this country by a progressive Democrat president. So it does happen. How about the fact
Civil
that
war.
our republic, okay, born in war, and our republic that was put together in times of extreme emergency, okay, put together by British men, which means Anglo-Saxons for the most part, wealthy land-owning, essentially almost like feudal lords, most of whom were the owners of African slaves, right? You know, that's a blight on our past. We actually had to have what Chris just mentioned. We had to have a war, not necessarily over that issue, although it was related. It was partly that issue. We had to have a war. 750 million Americans died before we could even legally settle that issue. And then through all the craziness that we've done, we had to actually have what started out at least as a nonviolent resistance movement, the civil rights movement, in order to remedy the blight of that. So it's not a perfect republic and never has been. But the fact is that what those men put together in both the Declaration of Independence, which does not carry the weight of law, which we just celebrated, right? Keep that in mind. July 4th is just a date. But it is the date that they signed what they'd agreed to on July 2nd, 237 years ago, the Declaration of Independence. It does not have the force of law in this country. It is not a legal document. It is, in fact, an illegal document. It is a document of treason against the proper government of the time, which was the British Crown. These were British subjects who seceded from their country and declared themselves free and independent states, 13 free and independent states, who then later, in 1789, we don't celebrate the Constitution on July 4th. We celebrate our Declaration of Independence. We celebrate the Constitution on September 17th, 1789. That's when we ratified it. That's when it became law. But that document, the Declaration of Independence, is the spirit of what put together that constitutional republic. And what they wrote in both of those documents transcends their own time and their own prejudice. Because by some miracle, they were able to negotiate and meet in Congress and develop and write and compromise and come up with something that is not perfect, but is based on timeless principles that transcends their own prejudice. I mean, when Thomas Jefferson wrote that all men are created equal, he owned African slaves. So one could argue, well, I guess all men except Africans are equal. Well, maybe at the time in his mind that's the case. but we understand that the principle that all men are created equal transcends his own prejudice. And we've taken measures to remedy that. Maybe sociologically we've still got a long way to go, but the fact is that we might talk a lot about racism in this country, but if you look around the world, we're the country with the least amount of racism, and we're the country with the most amount of races. In a lot of places in the world, they don't have problems with racism because they're homogenous. They're all of the same race. We're mixed from people from all over the planet, and we get along better than anybody else. I mean, look at what's going on in Egypt right now. You've got the Mubarak supporters. You've got the Morsi supporters, various other fundamentalist Muslim factions. You've got liberal, Western-educated Egyptians. You've got the agitation of various other foreign ethnic groups. You've got Christians. You've got Muslims. You've got Sunni. You've got Shia. And they're almost at each other's throats. We haven't had that problem since the 1860s. And even then, it wasn't a civil war like in these places where everybody was killing everybody else. It was drawn across geographical lines between governments. It was horrible, but it wasn't as chaotic. And guess what? When Lee surrendered, much to my chagrin, the North, although it occupied the South in a horrible way for the most part, things were reintegrated. There are definitely problems. I'm not a big fan of what the Yankees did to the South, especially Sherman in Georgia. But the simple fact is that it was the least contentious follow to a, quote, civil war than you've seen anywhere else in the world. That's what makes America unique. And that's what you're going to lose if you don't learn these things. It's what you're going to lose if you allow it to keep devolving. And it's taken us nearly 100 years to get here. We're not going to fix it overnight, but there are people trying to fix it. And I'm sure that you're wondering, well, how? How do we fix it, Rex? What can we do? Well, what Tex and Chris were talking about is very important. You got to get informed. You got to get educated. And you've got to remember your institutional memory, not just the institutional memory of your federal government, the Constitution, although that's important, but you have to look deeper. What are the traditions of our past and our heritage that have worked that we've discarded? And what are the ones that haven't worked that we're still employing? For example, the Federal Reserve scheme. That doesn't work. It's shitty. It's crappy. It only benefits the oligarchs and the international banksters. We got to get rid of that and its concomitant collection agency, the IRS, which Ted Cruz has talked about, because that doesn't work, and we've had a republic without the central bank long before that. So look back to the periods where we had real free banking, and let's learn from that and let's reapply it. The other thing, and this is very important because you're seeing it play out in Egypt, right? Some people say this was a revolution. Other people say it was a coup, right? Well, it was kind of both. It was a revolt from the people, and it was implemented by the military. So it was a military coup, although it's not a military dictatorship per se. Okay, it is the will of some of the people, I guess, so it is somewhat democratic. But why did that happen? Because ultimately, the only thing that enforces a government, or the only thing that will enforce any power structure, even if you have an anarchic system, someone's going to step up and take charge, is force. In our system, it's supposed to be restrained force. In a dictatorship, 1984, Brave New World, Egypt, whatever, it is unrestrained force. And how do we restrain that force? Well, the first thing is our founding fathers specifically distrusted and wrote a provision to prevent the federal government from having standing armies. But when you're in a state of perpetual undeclared global war, you will have every 2 years an NDAA reauthorizing military action without declaring war as constitutionally required. So we have a standing army. The temptation for oligarchs, when they push the people too far, is to use the power of that military against them. And you're seeing now, this administration is trying to purge your military of people who are not likely to follow those kind of orders. In fact, the Department of Homeland Defense is labeling military members who have been profiled to not follow those kinds of orders as terrorists, domestic terrorists. That's right. Janet Napolitano is singling out your brave young veterans as terrorists if they will not comply with the orders to do things that are unconstitutional domestically. So they didn't trust standing armies. What they did have, and what existed before the Constitution, before the Declaration of Independence, was the militia. the militia of the several states, not a federal, national U.S. militia, not a National Guard, not a state defense force, but the militia of the several states, which is basically you. Everybody between the ages of 16 and 60 who's able-bodied as a duty of citizenship would serve in the militia, which would be called up if there is a war or a natural disaster or some other kind of emergency. But since it's called up from all of us, the people, then it wouldn't be something that anybody could use against us, the people, because it would be us. And that is the enforcement mechanism for the Constitution. And until you have ultimate recourse to that force, you're going to keep losing your country. Now, this is not some kind of private game. This is written in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution and reiterated in the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. Read it. It's the Second Amendment. They're trying to take that away. They're eating away at the First Amendment. Now they're actually arresting people who won't allow federalized, militarized police forces to use their homes as stakeout centers against other people. That's a violation of the Third Amendment. The Fourth and Fifth, Rand Paul's talked enough about that. You know, you keep going down the list. They're trying to take them all away. Why? Because the Bill of Rights, those 10 amendments, are a negative restriction on the federal government. It says specifically what they are not allowed to do by we the people. But if they've got all the guns, and they've got all the hollow point bullets, and they've got all the foreign troops on their side, what are you the people going to do? You think a couple of deer hunters are going to be able to withstand a trained sniper, tank, cavalry unit, infantry, militarized SWAT team? Come on. Be realistic. If it devolves to that, you've already lost. Don't wait until then to go Wolverine on their ass. Now is the time to do it. We still have a chance to restore it. So get off your ass, get other people involved, share the show with them, tell them to read the Constitution, get them involved, and realize that you don't want to fall for the crap that happened in Tampa last year. In fact, Tex, you're down that way, aren't you?
Absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things is, we have to talk about the practicality of what's going on. I mean, it's a lot. It's one thing to talk about the principles of what's going on, but another thing to talk about actual legislation and practicality of situations that are coming up. So you have, for instance, the Snowden thing, which we talked about last week, where, you know, he comes out, he releases this information, and the essence of the information essentially is that they're not just spying on the terrorists, they're spying on everyone. They have everyone's data. That's the revelation. So now they're saying this is the greatest breach in the history of American, I don't know, I think the Bradley Manning thing was way worse because he released the actual text of all the cable communications. As I said before, it's not like Bradley Manning said, and they have this cable system where they're able to communicate from Washington to the embassies directly. You know, that wasn't the revelation. He just released all the data. Snowden didn't release all the data. As far as I know, he doesn't have access to all the data. Well, he used to, but he certainly doesn't now. What he released was the fact that they are tracking literally everything, and he doesn't think that that's constitutional or, you know, whatever his cause is. He's telling you, okay? So now we know. And the problem is, what are we going to do about it? Because the news media has already turned the story into Snowden's a jerk, you know, and everything that's wrong with him and what he's doing. Oh, my God, now he's in Hong Kong. That makes him look terrible. Oh, he must be some kind of big traitor, and now he's in Russia, and he's some huge big traitor. I don't know his story. I don't know him. I don't really have a vested interest in him or the outcome of any of that, right? All I know is I am now in possession of the information which came because of his action, that the government is literally tracking every phone call you make, how long it lasts, who you called, and possibly eventually building a system, if it doesn't already exist, that will track and record everything that you say, when you text, when you email, and when you talk on the phone. And that would be against the Fourth Amendment. But, of course, you know, the Constitution, nobody tends to really care about anymore in Washington. But that is the essence of the scandal. That's what he's telling you. And so what are you going to do about it? Well, it turns out this comes from FreedomWorks, and so I would just let me go through this here to let you know what is going on. So FreedomWorks is urging people to contact your representative and urge him or her to sponsor H.R. 2399, the Limit Internet and Blanket Electronic Review of Telecommunications and Email Act, or the Liberty Act, introduced by Representatives Justin Amash, Republican from Michigan, and John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan, so apparently Michigan's all over this thing. The bill would restrict the federal government's ability under the Patriot Act to collect information on Americans who are not connected to any ongoing investigations. The bill would also make Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act courts, or FISA court, opinions available to Congress and the public to increase transparency and accountability. The Liberty Act is urgent and necessary to stop the growing surveillance state. As we learned over the past few weeks, the National Security Administration, or the NSA, has been secretly collecting phone records of millions of innocent Americans. It is unconstitutional for the government to spy on Americans without a warrant or any reasonable suspicion that they are committing any crimes. This is a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. The bill would prevent the federal government from infringing on our right to privacy and privacy on the phone and the Internet. So there are positive things that are out there that are happening that we need to get behind and we need to support. And we have elected members of Congress to represent us, and we need to be cognizant of what they're doing. Whatever these types of issues come up, what is my congressman doing to address this? Unfortunately, my congressman is an idiot, and he's all Homeland Security, no matter what. It's for your safety, it's for your safety, and that's why you can't have any freedoms, because you need to sit at your house wearing, you know, padded clothing and a helmet in case something ever happens to you, and don't leave the house because it's too dangerous out there. So you have to know what your congressperson is doing, and tell them to, A, support what they're doing if you like it, and then tell them, you know, you're really royally screwing up, and then go talk to your neighbors about it and make sure that you got the right people there and that they're doing the right thing. And if they're doing the wrong thing, you need to give them feedback. Because this is the essence of the Ron Paul movement, where the leadership leans on Ron Paul to do things, or leaned on him to do things. He's not around in Congress anymore, but leaned on him to do things. And he always points to, but my supporters don't want me to do that, and I have 10 bajillion letters that say so, and I have to do what my voters want, and Congress respects that because they know they're all there because of their supporters. So, similarly, if your congressman, I don't know his or her name, wherever you happen to be, is able to say, look, I know you leadership want me to do this thing that maybe I even want to do or don't want to do, right? I have some sort of cognitive dissonance over doing it or not. All of my supporters are telling me that I can't support it. And you know what? They'll go to someone else. But eventually, if everyone's saying, I don't think Congress should be doing this, it doesn't get passed. And so you have to give your own congressperson cover to not go along with the bad bill that you hate in the first place, because they can point to, I'm getting way too much blowback at home and we can't do this. This is a bridge too far. Nobody wants this. So you have to get involved. And this Liberty Act, I think it's a great thing. I think it's a good way to go, and it's certainly something that I'll be contacting my congressperson about and letting them know that I support, and I want to see them support it, even though I know, unfortunately, my congressman doesn't give a crap about it and is adamantly against it. But screw him, I'm still contacting him and letting him know. And I, depending on his response, I won't be voting for him again in the future. He hasn't necessarily said that he's against it yet, but I highly suspect he is.
Yeah, that's no surprise. One thing you mentioned, which I said, great points. One thing that you brought up was they were leaning on Ron Paul because he's not around in Congress anymore. Well, Ron Paul's like Obi-Wan. You strike him down, he becomes more powerful than you can ever imagine, and he's going to strike back at the Empire. From what I understand, Dr. Paul this summer is launching Ron Paul TV. I don't know if that's the official name, but he's going to be doing more than just what he's been doing, which has been very effective. And I think you highlighted some very important points that he's been talking about for a long time. Good.
And that, speaking of Ron Paul TV, Newt Gingrich is going to be hosting Crossfire now. Crossfire used to be a great show. I used to watch it every day religiously. I would record it and go watch it. I mean, this is back before TiVo, kids, so back then you had to make the conscious effort to actually go do it manually yourself. It wasn't just like you came home and you just had it on TiVo. So I used to
and there was no
show,
and there was no YouTube. There were no YouTube
clips. Exactly. you couldn't get it again. If it once it was gone, right? It just didn't exist, and they never did reruns, so you either heard it or you didn't. But anyway, Newt Gingrich, and they're bringing Crossfire back. They turned Crossfire into this piece of crap show. It's like a political game show. It's just a joke. Anyway, CNN sucks, and they destroyed their own brand, and
they still suck.
Them and I. Yeah, I know. I hope they crash and burn. But he's coming back, and, you know, it should be – should be interesting. So I'll be tuning in for that show, if nothing else, than to hear Newt Gingrich and his thoughts on the issues of the day, because here's a guy who not only knows where the bodies are buried, but he buried some of the bodies himself when he was Speaker of the House, and he balanced the budget and was like, screw you, we're not doing that, this is the way we're doing it, and boom, now the budget's balanced. So
yeah, they screwed it. They screwed him for that one.
Exactly. It's the difference between, you know, as I've said, and I've been talking with you know, a lot of people in the Liberty movement, the Ron Paul movement, you know, Ron Paul says this, and he's all about, you know, the purity of the ideals and the movement and the Constitution of liberty and freedom, which is all true and right and yes. But then there's the actual practicality of this is how the game is played. This is the game of politics. It's screwed up. And you have to know how to play that game, and Gingrich was able to play it very effectively. So that's the thing I like about Gingrich is that he knows the practicality of American politics and how to get things done and when to get them done. You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right? And that's part of the difficulty that Ron Paul had was that he's advocating, he's creating a movement, which is great because he's successfully created the movement. And the disappointment that the Ron Paul supporters have in Rand Paul is that Rand Paul has to play the game. Ron Paul said the game is rigged. Everybody, the game is rigged. Look at this game. This is bullcrap. It's rigged. And now his son has to play the game in order to try to change the outcome because Ron Paul probably is telling his son, don't go do what I did because I already created the movement and now you have to go do the practicality of it.
Yeah, and that's absolutely the point that you know, there's principled positions which you don't want to compromise on. But there's practical considerations as to which battles you choose when you're inside the D.C. pressure cooker, because D.C. will kill the best of them, sometimes literally. And so, you know, you've got to be shrewd, and I think that Rand Paul has the benefit of experience from his father to know, you know, to pick and choose his battles so he doesn't get marginalized.
Of course the game is rigged, which is what Rand Paul said. But if you don't play, you can't win, which is what, you know, liberty candidates have to do when they're in Washington. The game's rigged.
Right.
You have to play, and you're going to have to compromise because there are certain battles you can't win every single time. Like, oh, my God, they didn't stand up for this, that, or the other. Well, you have to horse trade in Washington. Like, no, horse trade, you can never compromise on principles. Okay, well, if you're an unelected official not in Washington, D.C., you certainly can never compromise on your principles because you're just sitting around in the living room yelling at the walls or your friends or whatever it is, you never have to compromise. But if you're actually there and you want to continue to be able to influence things, like, okay, these are my core issues that I won't compromise on, these other things I don't necessarily like, but I have to compromise on. So you have to know where your representative stands and what they're compromising on, what core things they will not compromise on, because they have to have some sort of political backbone. Otherwise, you need to get rid of them. You need to vote them out of office the next opportunity you get, because if they have no political core, then they're useless.
Yeah, but I think the important thing to realize is compromising on certain policies or certain battles that are already lost. You know, I mean, there's no point in being Don Quixote, because all you're going to do is throw away political capital and get no result. But compromising on policy issues is different than compromising on constitutional principles. So I think that's a very important distinction. A lot of people, especially libertarian purists, come down hard on Rand Paul. Number one, think of it this way. Who else you got up there? Nobody. Okay? And number two, if you really look at what he's doing, he's picking and choosing his battles, and battles he cannot win. He is willing to seed the ground, and others he stands up firmly. He gave you a 13-hour filibuster. You haven't seen anything like that in the halls of D.C. in decades over your Fourth Amendment and your Fifth Amendment. So, you know, I think that it is important to understand that, and you don't have to agree with everything, because guess what? I don't agree with everything Ron Paul did, and I don't agree with everything Newt Gingrich did, okay? But I agree with most of what they did. and I agree with most of what Rand's doing. And it certainly is better than the alternative. Speaking of alternative, isn't
well,
Gingrich
you're not
go on Crossfire
that, hey,
going?
Sorry. Well, if you're not indicating that, hey, I support these things and I want to see more of that, if you're just saying, oh, well, they have, you know, not passed my purity test because they did this, and therefore I'm going to fold my arms and, you know, stump my nose at them and turn my back to what they're doing, then the people in the establishment, the rhinos, are going to say, see, you can't even please your own movement. And it's not going to encourage anybody else to try to do what they're doing. You have to give them support for the actions that they take, and you have to understand that they're in situations in Washington. It's a power game, and this is the most powerful government on planet Earth right now, probably in the history of humankind. They can't do everything all the time. They're there, and they have to allow certain orders of business to get done, whether they support all those orders of business or not, or none of their orders of business. None of what they want to do is going to get accomplished either. And that's why you need more people like that up there, because then the things that are being affected are the things that you support. You're always
and you need to be louder.
Washington.
And you need to be louder about your support. I mean, that's the thing. When Rand does something good, when he does the filibuster, when he stands up against the immigration bill, when he stands up against funding terrorists in Syria, when he does these things against his own party filled with frickin' douchebag rhinos like Jihad Jane McHammed and Lindsay Lightness, Loafers Graham and John Beef Jerky Boehner and all those other dildos, okay, when he does that, when Ted Cruz stands up, when Terry Gowdy stands up, when Goldberg stands up, when Justin Amash stands up, send in a loud support, not just thank them, but let all the assholes in their own party who stood against them know you stand with Rand. You're for Ted Cruz. You like what Justin Amash is doing. You like the fact that Trey Gowdy is pressuring this insipid woman from the IRS who, you know, basically spewed all her information and then decided to claim, you know, her Fifth Amendment privilege to not testify. Well, you can't spew all your bullshit and then not subject yourself to cross-examination. And they found her in contempt of Congress for that, and now apparently she's trying to work out an immunity deal so that she can testify, which, as far as I'm concerned, if she's looking for immunity, then she knows that she's guilty of doing something that she shouldn't be doing. But, you know, when they do stuff like that, you got to let the other assholes who stood against them know that you're in support of it, because ultimately, no matter how screwed up the system is, no matter how much disregard they have for the Constitution, ultimately these jerk-offs have to win re-election. And if enough voices say no or yes on particular things, they kind of have to respond. Why do you think Marco Rubio is now sponsoring, quote, conservative bills, popular conservative social issues, after his debacle with the Gangster 8 bill? Which, by the way, they're coming back into town this week. The House is going to be talking about this Gangster 8 Senate bill on, quote, immigration, which is really not about immigration, but about an invasion undermining your sovereignty. You'd better get on the ball. Write them letters. Send them tweets. Post on their Facebook page. Send them emails. Go visit their office. Give them a phone call. Do it all and put pressure on them to not pass this thing. Now, what Boehner's probably going to do, because there's at least 70 House members in his own caucus that are like, screw this, man. Some of them probably because they're afraid of going back to their district to try to win re-election next year, having supported this thing, and others because they actually principled about it, are against him on this. So what Boehner's going to try to do is cut it up in little pieces and force-feed it to him. So watch him. Tell him you don't want it. Tell him that there are plenty of unemployed Americans here who need jobs before we start inviting foreigners in. Tell them we want the border secure because we're getting disease, ecological disasters, and you know, criminals and terrorists crossing that border. It's not just guys looking for work, okay? And
not to mention the fact that it's suppressing wages in the United States.
Well, exactly. That's the point. Undermine our economy.
At a time when there's historic unemployment, we have people coming in who are working off the books and taking jobs, and they're like, oh, Americans would never want those jobs. I don't know. I think Americans would want those jobs if they paid enough, but if you have a bunch of people coming in who are working off the books for, you know, less than minimum wage or maybe very bare minimum wage, then Americans won't do those jobs because you're not paying the right amount because there's supply and demand, and if you believe in the market, you understand supply and demand. And if people are saying, you know, let's just – not everybody who comes across does fruit picking, but let's use fruit picking because it always comes up, right? So people aren't picking fruit. Well, you know, the regular Americans don't want to do that job, right, because it's hard labor and it doesn't pay enough. Well, maybe the reason it doesn't pay enough is because you're not paying enough for it, right? And if you paid enough for it, you would have people who would go do that job. But you don't pay enough for it because you have off-the-books labor that's being paid a substandard wage. Like, oh, yeah, but then the price of avocados would go up or whatever. Well, okay, I'll pay 50 cents more for an avocado because you know what? That's the price that an avocado is, apparently, because no one will go get me an avocado, which is what happens when you buy at the store. You go to the store and you're like, I want a freaking avocado, right? And they're like, don't worry, I got you an avocado. But by the way, here's how much it costs to get you this avocado. It's like, well, but I really want it, so I'm going to pay 50 cents more for it. Or, you know what? I don't care about avocados so much. I'll find something else or some near substitute for it. But you still have to pay what it costs to produce. And if you're undermining wages by just flooding in with a whole bunch of people who are escaping a horrible economic or political situation in their country coming here, then you're undermining your own wages for low-skilled labor, and then that lowers it for everybody else. So it's affecting you. And now, you know what? You can't afford avocados anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter how cheaply they're being produced.
Yeah, and I think that people miss that point, because who gets harmed most by that kind of stuff? The people at the lowest end of the economic ladder, which tend to be the illegal aliens. So it's a policy that harms them. And the thing you have to ask yourself is if, you know, we have 11 to 40 million of them already here. Many of them are criminals. Some might be terrorists, but I would say the bulk of them are not, you know, terrible people. They've been living here for a long time, raising their kids here, probably paying taxes, maybe under somebody else's social security number, but still paying taxes and all that other stuff. And you're going to have to deal with them. But the question is, how do you deal with them when you've got a locust horde crossing your border already? You got to stop the flow and then deal with the current problem pragmatically, compassionately, legally, okay? But that's not happening. That's not, you know, Rubio, who ran one way as a Tea Party darling, then flipped on it and said, the legalization is going to happen. We're legalizing these people. After we do that, then we'll seal the border. That's what you did in 86, dumbass, and it didn't work out well. We ended up increasing not only the quantity back then by 100%, but now we've increased that number by, at minimum, 400%. So 400% of even 11 million would mean that you would be dealing with, you know, close to 50 million in just a few short years if you do this now. So you got to call them, okay? You've got to hammer them. You've got to email them. You've got to write them letters. You got to go visit their office. Make it ugly, because the fact is that when Rand Paul and Ted Cruz do something, by the way, you know, Ted Cruz, he's one of those, you know, hardcore anti-immigrant people, right? You know, come on, his dad's a Cuban immigrant. Being pro-immigration.
Let me add something. Cruz got over 40% of the Hispanic vote, and that's something that people don't want to talk about, because he did it by talking about the rule of law and the Constitution and individual liberty and those kind of things. Cruz
and no illegal immigration.
Straight up about it. Yeah.
He ran on no 40%. Illegal immigration. Yep.
Well, I just want to throw that in there while you were talking about Cruz.
No, that's a very valid point. But, you know, and it's coming to you next, Chris, because you haven't chimed in for a while, and we're in the last half hour anyway.
Stuffing my face.
Well, that happens, you know, you man's got to eat. But you know, the fact is that this thing's coming up, so you've got to deal with it, which means you got to get active and get other people active. I mean, it's not that hard. It's not you've got time to write them a letter, okay? Because they're not going to be voting on this thing this week. Probably before August, if John Boehner can, you know, squeeze enough votes up by buying enough wishy-washy squishes in the Republican House. But then whatever changes they make to it, this thing's going to have to go back to be reconciled with the Senate bill. So it's, you know, they're going to try to do it before August. So you still got time to mail them a letter and, you know, write it up, send it in the mail. The post office will scan it and tag it and make a copy of it and file a copy with the NSA, and then they'll forward it to your congressman. You know, post on their Facebook page. Send them a tweet. Tweets are great because tweets are public, which means everybody who's following that particular representative is going to see what you tweeted them. You know, and the phone calls work too because they do tally them. You know, they're not going to necessarily listen. You know, the intern is not going to listen to your dissertation on why this is a bad
deal.
Yeah,
they will.
This person's against. Yeah, the NSA will keep a record of it. But you know, they'll say this person's against, this one's for. Hey, we got 500 calls today, 350 against. You know, 154 or whatever. So, but don't limit yourself to one thing. If you've got, you know, six tools in your quiver, why are you going to only use one of them? Fire all of them. Okay, this is an important issue, and this is an important issue that you got to handle now. Another important issue coming up soon that you're going to have to get on point for is, remember, we are now first week of July. Late August last year, down in Florida, how's the weather down there in Florida? Down in Florida, there was a hurricane. Now, I'm not talking about Isaac. There was a hurricane called Ginsburg, who came in for Rove and Romney and Sununu and all that cleck and screwed up the Republican electoral process to the degree that you will never have any real conservative as the top of the ticket again. And couple that with this bill, which, you know, all of a sudden, because you've made illegal aliens legal, you're not suddenly going to gain the Latino vote for the Republican Party. That's not how you win. Ted Cruz proved that you win by running on principle. If you run on pandering to them by saying, oh, hey, we're going to make all your illegal cousins legal, and so, you know, you'll vote for us, most of them are still going to vote Democrat, and the conservative ones might go away from the Republican Party for doing compromising, stupid stuff like this. So you add this gangster aid immigration bill along with the RNC 2012 rules, and you will never see a Republican president again. And, of course, if that Republican happens to be someone like, oh, I don't know, Mitt Romney, thank God. But since the Republican Party is the only party on the federal level that may field a conservative, you will never see another conservative again. You will hand the federal government over to the Democrats, who are basically communists, for the next 40 years. And I assure you, this country, whether a republic or a democracy, won't survive 40 years of Democrat rule. So these two things are very important, and I would suggest that you call Congress, email them, tweet them, write them. Handwritten letters are great. Go visit their office. That's fantastic. They don't even have to be there. Just the fact that, you know, they say, hey, man, six people showed up today that didn't want this immigration bill, that's going to have an effect, because they know that if you had enough wherewithal to show up in their office, whether at home or in D.C., then they know that you're the kind of person who's going to tell 10, 20 friends who are likely to tell 10, 20 friends, and it's going to cause a problem for them. Okay? So you've really got to put that kind of pressure on. And then the other thing is August 14th in Boston is going to be this RNC meeting to address these rules. You know, there's people up there that are fighting for you, people like Mark Willis, people like Morton Blackwell, who want these rules changed so that it is a more democratic process within the party in order to elect the top of the ticket through a Republican electoral college, small r, which has a huge impact on down-ballot candidates. Now, we got 2014. Can the Republicans pull it off? And if so, will it be a bunch of sissy, squishy rhinos or real conservatives? That's up to you. That's up to you waking other people up and getting them involved. But when it comes to 2016, you got no shot with these rules. None. None whatsoever. Someone like Rand Paul cannot secure the nomination in this shitty party, which is the only party that he's going to be able to secure it in and win, if you don't get these rules changed. So I suggest you get involved with that. There's links in our group, Texan Rex's Liberty Militia. There's plenty of talk about it in Coalition of Freedoms, Chris's group. Also check out the Texan Rex show page on Facebook. Like the page. You'll get notifications in your news feed about when we're broadcasting and other important alerts. And we've also got below the show picture, all the comments, there's all the links to these important things. One thing, if you're on Facebook, that I suggest you strongly check out is RNC Rules Action Alert. It's a page on Facebook, RNC, as in Republican National Committee, Rules Action Alert. This is a very good page for petitions and information and getting information out there about building a grassroots pressure to get this shitty party, which is only less shitty than the other one by a hair's breadth, to change its rules so that the grassroots can decide who the nominee is. Now, hopefully that means a real conservative, but if not, if that, the grassroots want some douchebag like Romney, then hey, you know, nothing I can do about that. But generally speaking, grassroots or conservatives are going to go for someone like Goldwater or Reagan or Ron Paul or Rand Paul. So get the, if you want the grassroots involved, and you, if you're listening to the show, you're probably grassroots, get these rules changed so that we can actually field real candidates and win. That's the important thing, is you want to win. You want to win on the Constitution. You want to win on principle. You need people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and all these other guys. So get these rules changed. Gentlemen, we got about 15 minutes of show left. I know that we were supposed to be talking about letting our people go. Well, if you want to let the people go, you want to let them be free, you got to put the government back in its constitutional box, and that is not a democracy. It is a constitutional republic, and these are the things that we're talking about. So why don't we try to wrap it up in the next 15 minutes. Let's go to Chris and then on over to Tex.
Well, I think that everything that you guys have covered is important, and it's always much more than we ever have time to talk about. You know, we could do a show every night and on just one topic and go deep in it. And it's really important. I think that's something that I've noticed managing a group, because I was never did Facebook or social media until the primary last year, and actually until like January or something is when I first got involved. And one of the things that I've noticed about social media is that the majority of people on it, you know, they're either trolls that are designed to create disinformation and break up unity, or they're people who are running around posting the news of the day thinking they're doing something, and it really doesn't do anything. All it does is just spread around. You know, you're being a free advertising agent for the news companies, you know, who are typically liars, don't tell the truth, and very subversive, and they have their own agenda. And the idea of the internet and the alternative media is that you have the ability to pick a topic, or a topic is handed to you, you know, like the war, like Egypt, or the Syria situation, or the IRS situation, you know, something happens, and you're able to actually focus on that topic and bring in information and then have discussions about it so that you can go out and educate other people. That's really the power of social media. And you're looking at what Ben Swan's getting ready to put together, what Ron Paul is putting together, you know, what... to me, what social media really is about. So it's really important that you just don't become part of the problem. You know, running around posting articles all day long in the news of the day is not being engaged. All you're doing is just being, like I said, you're just being a free mail carrier for the major media. The idea is that you build groups of people and you associate with people who actually give a crap about their country and want the real answers behind things. Because a lot of times there are things going on, but, you know, like you think about, we've had so many scandals that have just fallen on us in a row. We're not even talking about the Rosen situation anymore. We're barely talking about the NSA situation. A little bit here pops up once in a while, but everybody wants to focus on Snowden, which isn't the point. The point is that you have an out-of-control government that's gone beyond constitutional responsibility a long time ago, not just, you know, recently. Snowden was just a messenger. But you also have the IRS situation, you have the AP situation. You never hear about that anymore. And that was only a couple weeks ago. So why is it that we don't hear about these things that are vital and important? Well, because they keep throwing the next news of the day or the next crisis of the day at you. And you know, it's the same thing with Syria. I've said it over and over and over again, and it's one of my most it's something I keep an eye on a lot and have done massive research on, because I believe that it is the pinnacle of what is going on with our foreign policy, and it's a place where everything that we're doing wrong is manifesting itself in Syria. Syria is not our puppet regime that we put in power. Syria is a sovereign nation, and we got our fingerprints all over that situation, and people are not paying attention to it. And Syria also butts us up against Russia and China, so
So it's a, in some ways, it's a lot bigger deal than some of these other countries because we're stepping on the allies of some pretty big, powerful countries. And yet, how many people even know what's going on in Syria? You know, it's a foreign invasion. Yeah, they had some protests in the beginning, but it's been a foreign invasion funded by Saudi and Qatar and, you know, some in the EU, some are backing out. They don't want to get involved because, you know, you got guys putting out videos eating the organs of their their opponents. I mean, it's pretty ugly over there, and it's a terrible situation. I just posted a video yesterday of somebody had done a documentary in these camps and the sex slave situation going on in Jordan in these camps of these Syrian refugees. You can't find this crap on U.S. news. You got to go overseas. You got to go to foreign national countries and find their news sources to get the truth because in the U.S., you know, all the major media and the money's behind it, they all want war, you know, and so they're going to lie constantly and withhold truth and information because they want to justify the war. And that's really what it boils down to. You know, the bankers' wars. So, you know, the thing is not to get off into Syria, but just that as an example. You know, you have to be able to look through the smoke and noise and make a decision inside yourself. What is important and what is it and how am I going to educate myself and then how am I going to educate other people once I've learned the truth about something? That is so vital. It's back to that education conversation. It is so vital because you know, social media can just be a roar of energy and noise and articles and videos and get nothing done.
Or and Kim Kardashian's
really. Or it can be a very effective tool for mature people who are willing to look at something, you know, get the emotion out of it, do the research, pull people into the conversation, build the conversation, and then let people go and spread that information and knowledge. That is that right there is what I thought social media was when I first got involved. And then I found out very quickly it wasn't. And that's really what it should be. And there's a handful of people who are making it work in that area. And you got to remember, I would bet you that 10% of the people out there are disinformation people. If not more.
Well,
and their whole goal is to spread conspiracies, spread dissent, and confuse people over the crap that doesn't mean anything. And so you got to get smart. Anyway, go ahead.
Mermaids, yo, all up in this. Yeah, you got to be careful. It doesn't get deeper than mermaids. Those things, they're, you know, thousands of feet below the ocean, and the Navy's suppressing mermaid knowledge from you because the mermaids, it turns out, all those Democrat and they don't want to get anyway. So, yeah, I mean, what you're talking about, you know, looking at foreign press. First, okay, foreign press is out there. There's a lot of press, right? But I wouldn't necessarily trust foreign press because it's foreign. In many cases, foreign press is run directly by their government. So it's just as biased. It's just biased in a different way where you don't see necessarily the message that's going on. What you have to trust is your ability to research and cross-reference, right? Because the truth is out there. Somewhere there's an objective truth as to what's actually going on, and there are multiple competing agendas as to what's happening, and you have to understand who the stakeholders are in these crises or conflicts and what people want. And people in the media are supposed to be objective, but they're not, because nobody is objective. It's impossible for a human being necessarily to be objective. They always are bringing a point of view to what they're covering. And so you have to understand everything that's going on in order to objectively understand the situation and figure out what you think. So looking at foreign media is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You should understand, however, that it's probably just as biased as what you're seeing. The problem is the American press is more about distraction and sort of keeping you filled up with, you know, news about the Kardashians or whatever. Who's even watching this? Who even cares about the Kardashians? You know, they're trying to distract you with these things. Exactly. Nobody is interested in this stuff, but they cover
people
it.
People are.
You know,
I just don't know who the hell they are.
Yeah, I've never met anybody, but it's covered as if there's all this vast swath of America that gives a crap about it. And the Trayvon Martin case, I don't know Trayvon Martin, I don't know George Zimmerman, and I don't live in that neighborhood, right? So I don't care, you know, okay, no. This thing happened and somebody died, but thousands of people die every day, and I don't get involved in every case. And when I turn on the news for the past week, they're covered, every channel is covering the case all day long, because you know why? They go on break, you know? So, oh, yeah, this is awesome. I go on break, eat a sandwich, whatever. So there's this infinite capacity for distraction, but you have to realize that the story goes on. Things are happening. You have to research them on your own. But I wouldn't necessarily trust foreign press just because it's foreign. You have to understand they're bringing a bias as well, and you have to research on your own. And then you have to understand that there are certain things that you will never be able to know because the information doesn't exist, and so you have to extrapolate what you think, you know, may be going on and what your opinion is about those things. And realistically, what outcome do you want to see, and what do you think would be the best thing, and try to take the actions that would help work towards that and educate other people, and maybe they have a piece of the puzzle that you don't have. That's the whole point of conversation. So self-education is very important. That self-education has to be shared with others and bounced off of them to make sure, like, hey, here's what I found, that this makes sense, and maybe you have some information they don't, or maybe they know that, hey, that bit of information that you have is completely incorrect because mermaids don't freaking exist, and you need to put the crack pipe down because even the people who made that thing said at the end that it's fake.
What about merman? Merman, they exist.
They're mer butlers because the mer butlers get with the mermaids. The mermen, there's no mermen. It's mer butlers.
No, but yeah, text, those are, I mean, yes, just because it's foreign press doesn't mean it's objective. It's certainly subjective, especially like Press TV is run by Tehran. Russia Today is financed by Moscow. But you do get perspectives that our insipid controlled media doesn't hear. And you brought up that Zimmerman case. If you look at the raw footage of the trial and then you look at the coverage of that trial, they are spinning it. I mean, it is and it just reveals the lie. I saw a tape where John Bolton was speaking somewhere and got booed, and Fox News took out the boo track and put in an applause track. I mean, all of these channels are spinning this stuff, and yes, they're distracting us with Kim Kardashian's ass. And like I said, I don't know anybody other than, what's his name, West, Kanye, is that it? Kanye, who should care about it. You know, so it is distracting, and the fact is that you do get real reporters every now and then. Someone like, I don't know, Andrew Breitbart or Michael Hastings. What happened to them?
Both dead.
Rather suspicious. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm just saying that there seems to be a pattern. You put a little bit of logic, a little bit of rationale, you do a little research, and then you know you try to find some trusted sources. Always look at them with a skeptical eye. But, you know, you'll hear things on Russia Today that you will never hear on Fox News and MSLSD. You'll hear things on Press TV, not necessarily their editorial spin agenda crap, but sometimes they actually interview people who have a different point of view. And then you might want to use your brain. Imagine that, some critical thinking instead of just being spoon-fed the crap through the television, to actually analyze the situation and always measure it against what a legitimate United States interest is. Is it constitutional? Should we do something to further it or something to stop it? And that's really the key. So when you hear stuff about what's going on in Egypt, even though all weekend all they've been covering is this plane crash, which, tragic as it is for the families of the two young girls who died, is not that huge a surprise. And, you know, they covered it all day long while Egypt's on fire. And notice, while Egypt's on fire, all of a sudden Turkey's not on fire and neither Syria. Really?
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
Right.
Give me a friggin' break. They're just not talking about it. So, you know.
Well, what about the rest of the countries
yeah,
we've interfered
world,
with?
Man.
Libya, Tunisia, they're all on fire.
Boko Haram killed
Iraq.
The sad thing,
Iraq, I mean,
sad
they,
thing is,
they kill,
it's driven.
They kill 40, 50, 100 a day in Iraq. Mm. You know, the Sunni-Shia battle in Iraq that, you know, we went in there and spread democracy.
Yep.
Freaking idiots.
Well,
yeah, tell
the
you,
sad
man,
thing is, it's driven by viewer interest. So how many viewers are tuned, oh, my God, there's been a plane crash. I want to hear what somebody said who was in the crash. Like, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like this before. I was told my heart was going, adrenaline and whatever. It's like, oh, now I feel like I've been there. you know, and somebody else tells their story and they're crying or they're happy because they survived or whatever it is, and people get involved in that emotional stuff. And then when you start talking about politics in Egypt, they get distracted. You know, I've been making fun of the mermaid thing because it deserves to be mocked and ridiculed mercilessly. But the sad thing is, like, that ran on the Discovery Channel, right? Which
yep.
is supposed to be
yep.
about opening your mind and understanding things and looking at scientific things, at the scientific, sense of scientific inquiry. And instead, it's just like this fake, bogus crap. And now there's a bunch of people running around believing.
Yeah, but
maybe mermaid
farts have something to do with global warming. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Well. The mermaids will attack us if we don't stop damaging the ocean. There's a war on mermaids, y'all. That's all I'm saying, war on mermaids. Anyway, so the problem with that is, guess what? That turns out to be the highest-rated show that the Discovery Channel's ever put on. So do you think that they're going to stop making up bullcrap? Next thing you know, it's going to be Sasquatch. The thing is, they've run the Sasquatch thing, you know, Bigfoot into the ground. So now they're going to come up with new stuff, you know.
I thought we put Sasquatch in the White House as First Lady. Oh, I apologize. Did I say that out loud?
So,
is that your
so
outside
thing
voice?
Is we encourage this because people themselves are encouraging this thing by their actions because, oh, wow, this is a major distraction. Wouldn't it be cool if there were mermaids? Or at least for an evening, I can pretend to have this knowledge because mermaid knowledge, at least, is like a defined, limited horseshit level of knowledge that I could possess by the same people who made it up. And then I can sit around, what would it be like? Could you imagine, you know, instead of talking about things that really matter, which is like, what are we doing in Egypt? Who's influencing which side? Why is this happening? What is, you know, what would we want to see out of Egypt, you know, in our interests? You know, should we even be involved in this crap or should we just leave them alone? How vested an interest do we have, and if so, why, and have a national conversation about this? Or, better yet, rather than postulating on some foreign country that, you know, God bless them, but let them do their own thing, what in the hell we should be doing here, because I'm not meeting anybody on the left or right who's happy with how things are going.
Well, wait,
so
quit
talking about
global warming
and start talking about, you know, what's going on here. Have conversations about global warming.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Obama went over to Africa.
What's going on?
Went over to Germany to tell the Germans and Africans that he's going to fix global warming or climate change or whatever the hell they call it now.
Yeah, we just have to let a bunch
of
Africans die of heat stroke and there won't be any global warming.
Of course,
that's what he said.
yeah, if you get too many cars with air conditioning, it'll blow up or what did he say?
Yeah. It'll make the world boil over.
Boil over, that was the terminology. That's almost
what
like
ass.
Gore and his comment about how hot the earth is inside.
Yeah.
Million degrees.
A million
These
degrees
people, you know what's scary about this? Is that people believe this shit and vote for these people. That's what bothers me. It has never bothered me. I mean, man, there's always men who will rise to power and want control. That's the nature of man, okay? And I guess the thing, you know, just to throw this out, is quit getting surprised. That's why I've never done the Obama News of the Day crap, you know, because it's like he's not the problem. He's a symptom of the disease. And
That's right.
Until you get that, you're always going to be in a reactive position. You know, and it's just mm-hmm. it's just insane to think about. How did we get here? People vote these people into power, and then they get in there, and these people are corrupt. They're proven to be corrupt. They don't, you know, work for their constituency properly. And then what do? They vote them back in. They vote them back in over and over and over again. That's what's broken in this country. Sorry.
Yeah.
Probably towards the end of the night.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So let's go with the final thoughts, and then I'll close it out.
What's Tex talking about?
I don't know. Either you got any final thoughts, or you,
it's the humidity.
You pretty much rolled it through.
It really kills
you. Yeah, the mermaid.
In Florida, what do you expect?
I wasn't on mute. Yeah, we were trying to fix the air conditioner.
All right. Either one of you want to?
I thought you found a mermaid.
Yeah, between the mermaids and air conditioner, the world's going to boil over. But okay,
the mermaids have taken my air conditioner hostage, and they said they're not going to make it any cooler unless I admit that they exist, and I'm refusing.
You should refuse. But yeah, no, you guys are both right. I mean, it's insanity that people fall for this stuff without critically thinking about it. But we're 8 minutes past 12, so we're gonna wrap it up. Anybody else got anything they want to throw in there, or shall I bring it on home?
No, I've said my piece. Unless Tex has got some stuff.
No, I think I'm done. So
we beat the horse. All right, I'll bring it on home. I'll bring it on home real quick. We'll do some housekeeping first. Chris, plug your group and explain the transition you've made.
Yeah, well, what happened was we had a couple broken features that Facebook wouldn't fix, so we had to build a new group. That's why it's Coalition of Freedoms with an S on the end. I'll change it back once I get everything cleared out of the other group. And this is a group for discussion. This is not a group for the news of the day and the picture of the day and your pet dog and every, in 2016 promotions of who you think should run for president. It's like, come on, let's focus on, we have, a dozen or more threads where we'll throw up a picture and say, okay, here's the Syria posting thread or the Egypt posting thread or the IRS posting thread. And our goal is to get people to focus in that thread, because anybody understands Facebook, you throw a bunch of crap on there, 10 people throw, their article or picture of the day, and it drives all the other stuff off the page. And so we're really not into that. We're into, let's pick a topic that's important, and let's work it. Let's communicate. Let's find the appropriate articles and videos, and let's have discussions and educate ourselves, and then you guys can go off into the world, the cyber world, and spread your knowledge. That's the goal. That's when I built this group. That was the whole idea of it, was to build coalitions and not get caught up in the little issues, but stay focused on the important things, freedom, constitution, rule of law, those types of basic things. Whether or not you want to have orange hair or marry your dog, that's your problem. It's like, whatever. we're not going to have any freaking freedom for you to go out and push your social issues if we don't get some core issues of this country taken care of. And that's kind of where the purpose of the group. It's not, I don't think it'll ever be a real popular group because of that, because we try to stay focused on real things. And sometimes, Rex gets too damn heavy. but we go deep, And because of that, I think that only people who really care and really want to get into critical thinking and past the emotional content.
A small, tireless minority setting brush fires of liberty. That's the whole point.
That's us. Yeah, maybe that should be the new name.
Yeah. All right. So check it out, people. Coalition of Freedoms. Thanks, Chris. And also check out the Tex and Rex Show on page on Facebook. Like the page, and you'll get notifications of when we're broadcasting and such. We started the show out with the famous line from Ten Commandments by Charlton Heston playing Moses to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And we talked about Egypt. And frankly, I don't really want to talk about Egypt. If you're a faithful Christian, you've got the personal interest that, 10% Coptic Christian population of an 85 million person country, where most of them are Muslims and that are the Christians have been there since 2,000 years, are being persecuted and killed. That's a personal interest. I don't know that that's a national interest, and I think we have to understand something. Chris brought up, you're not going to get your social issues through if we don't get our core principles right. Well, listen to what you're calling them, social issues. Well, if it's a social issue, then it's a societal problem, not a government problem. You want to fix the society, social issues? Fix it socially. The government is supposed to create a structure where we have stability, where we can order our lives together as far as how we're going to do certain things regarding property, regarding common defense, that sort of stuff. Okay, and so find those broad issues and agree upon them. So instead of having a revolution like we have in Egypt going on right now and having a coup d'etat, and then doing another one in 2 weeks as Tex cogently pointed out, once you go down this revolution path, you're going to keep having them one after the other until you find some kind of way to restore stability. Usually that's through some kind of a dictatorship. The revolution we had in this country was not that kind of a revolt, because what the founding fathers in those original 13 colonies were trying to do was reclaim their rights of liberty under British common law, going back to the Magna Carta and prior to that throughout all of Christendom's history for 2,000 years in long development for people to have liberty. And that's what they were doing. They were reclaiming it. It was an ordered revolution. Yes, there was a battle, but let's be clear about something. The colonists would have never beat the British if it wasn't for the support of other countries, chiefly the French, the Spanish, the Dutch, some Native American Indians as well. They figured that under the American system, maybe they'd do a little bit better than they had been under the British. Sadly, the federal government took over. That didn't work out too well for some of them, but hopefully we've corrected that now. That's the kind of revolution that we had here, not the kind that's going on in Egypt. Leave the Egyptians to the Egyptians. Let them sort out their own problem. Let the Syrians sort out their own problem. We shouldn't be picking sides. We don't know what we're doing. We can't afford it. We're falling apart here at home. So when we echo Charlton Heston's words, let my people go, that's to the federal government, the Federal Reserve, and all their machinations. If you want them to let you go, then you need to send in champions like Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Justin Amash, to dismantle this federal chokehold and make sure that you get good conservative people, whether they're libertarians, Republicans, or independents, at your state level, because the nullification battle is coming, and it's going to be a big problem with the federal government, whether it's run by Republicans or Democrats, until you get enough people up there who believe in the Constitution. So the important thing to do is learn. Find out what the Constitution really says. Teach others. Get them involved. Share this show. You can click download right below the link of the show. You get an MP3. You can share it with people, burn a DVD or a CD, email it to them. Get the word out. You don't have to agree with everything we say, but that's what a broad coalition of constitutional principles is about. We don't have to agree on everything. We don't have to live our lives exactly the same. We don't have to look alike, sound alike, speak alike. We can have our own different unique cultures and communities, but we have to have some common principles. The rule of law, not popular will. Popular will can always be swayed and will always lead to tyranny. The rule of law means everybody, from the president on down, is subject to the law. And that law is the law that is framed within the enumerated powers of the Constitution and doesn't go out of those bounds. And we hold them accountable. So learn what that means. Learn the difference between a republic and a democracy, what the Constitution says, which doesn't mention the word democracy once, but it does mention the word republic. And fight for those principles by hammering Congress to not invite 40 million people who have no idea how our system works, that we barely understand, into this country to suppress wages and take jobs away from Americans and cause all sorts of problems. Secure that border. Tell them that now. Fight to change the RNC rules so that we can get a real conservative in 2016. And keep your eye on Virginia and New Jersey elections this year and on the entire House and a third of the Senate next year. Get people involved. And I don't care whether it's the Republican Party, the Libertarian Party, a Tea Party, a local, you know, actual Tea Party as opposed to, you know, a bunch of ladies sit around drinking tea and reading books. Whatever it takes, but get people involved, because everybody needs to be involved. Everybody needs to know these things. And if you really want liberty, if you really want to tell that federal government, let my people go, and you want to do it the right way, not like they're doing it in Egypt, maybe that's right for them, but that's not right for us, then you got to know what your power is, and your power is chiefly in your knowledge. Because if you don't know how to act, you can't take any action. Once you educate yourself, then you've got to take action, because all the knowledge in the world, if it's not acted upon, is useless. But if you don't know what you're doing, then any action you take is likely to result in the opposite of what you wanted. So learn what you're fighting for. Form coalitions with people, like-minded people, on those basic principles. You don't have to agree on everything else. You don't have to, you know, like Chris said, orange hair, blue hair. Who cares? That's your life. Live your life. Just make sure that you leave mine alone, and the only way to do that is to have a common set of principles on which we agree, and those are American principles. They're enshrined in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Learn what they are and get out there and make it happen. Then we can all turn around and look at D.C. and say, let my people go, and live our lives in peace. It ain't going to happen overnight. It ain't going to happen in the next election cycle. But if you don't start it now, you might as well agree to be a slave of the oligarchs. We'll see you next week. This is Tex and Rex, signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.